You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Stadium and Gale. It's your favorite Uncle Silk.
It's Dan.
And Papa Delatorre.
I was about to call you Daddy Delatorre, but I thought the internet
Okay, Dan, this is a children's, this is a family show, please.
Thought the internet might take off. Nick, congratulations, brother. If you don't follow Nick on social media, which you should, I think about 50,000 people do. But if you don't, Nick, why don't you share the news with the podcast family?
Gonna be a dad. Have known for a little while. Was keeping it on the down low because we wanted to tell my parents in person. They live in South Florida, so we used the Florida Miami baseball game, that trip down there, as the opportunity to tell them. Don't count on your boomer parents to get a Vanilla Ice reference. Bought my wife a sweatshirt that said Ice Ice with an arrow down to her belly. My sister got it. My sister, she's in her 20s. She got it. And then the video that I have, my sister literally says, read Lauren's sweatshirt. And my parents are like, Ice Ice, what's Ice Ice? So luckily we had a backup plan, like a little booty thing, a little booties that said like, hey, bring these, hold these till September. So timing, terrible.
Terrible timing.
Awful timing. Baby is due 2 days before Texas A&M plays the Fighting Billy Napiers. So sleep, who knows? What is sleep? There is no sleep.
You're going to need some joy around that time of the year.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I can keep my sarcasm to a minimum on 2 hours of sleep a night during football season.
Well, congratulations, brother. Yeah, congrats, very, very happy for you. You know, I know Silk's very proud of his daughter and son, but now you're having a daughter, so congratulations to you.
Dan ruined the gender reveal, bro.
It's all about Dan. It's all about Dan.
He had a whole gender reveal set up, and
Dan's out of the running for Godfather. Just took himself right out.
I'd be a bad godfather.
Oh my god!
I've got two little nephews. World's best uncle. They had a little.
Hopefully, you didn't ruin their gender reveals, man.
That's my bad. So Nick, why don't you make the announcement? My apologies.
Well, if you're watching on YouTube, I've got my girl dad hat on, having a little girl. Not sure I know what to do with a baby daughter. I think a son. We'd be wrestling. We'd be, you know, running wind sprints. I would be taking my own advice, which I told you, Silk. You know, listen, really encourage the left hand throwing early on.
I was going to ask you about softball pitches, dude. Like lefties get the bread the bag too. Like you tired?
I don't know. We're about to learn.
No, I think it's blessings, bro. I always wanted a daughter first when I first started dating my wife, and I always told my mom I wanted to have a daughter first. I have cousins that. Male cousins that have older sisters, and that's like the cheat code, bro. So it is, man. Like you're gonna get, you know, you'll have your son later. I'm gonna go ahead and speak that into existence, but you want a daughter first, man. Daughters take care of you when you can't, you know, wipe your own ass and do that type of stuff. So just spoil her, and when you do have a son, she's gonna be like a second mom, you know, and nurture and teach him. If the boy's first, like he's just gonna teach her how to fart and do goofy shit, man. Like, you know, she's gonna be rude. That's how my little sister was, man. She had two older brothers, and she was just like a dude. So blessings, bro. Blessings to you and the old lady, man.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Nick. Sorry, I ruined that announcement.
Unbelievable.
So we've got Myaka Gator said, Silk Thompson Delatorre incoming.
Yeah. Names. Like, what are you thinking names-wise?
Not going to be Danielle.
Not going to be Danielle. Sorry, Dan. My sister's name is Danielle. Don't know if we're gonna do that. I don't know. I like the name Sloan, little entourage vibes.
Yeah,
Sloan? I think Lauren Sloan. I like that name.
You never watch Entourage, so.
No, I haven't. I heard about it.
There's a character named Sloan that. Top notch.
Dan, we're talking about my dog.
You mentioned Entourage. You mentioned Sloan from Entourage.
I was trying to see where this was going.
Dan's out of The Godfather. Dan's out of Uncle. Dan might get a picture on the third verse.
Obviously, I'm not going to be the uncle.
Yeah. You know, I'm not even getting a baby shower invite at this point.
No.
That's fine. Like I said, Brooke and my son. I've been to 2 baby showers, and that's 2 more than I've ever wanted to go to.
You gotta go to black baby showers, man. It's like a DJ's vibes. You know? The food's fire.
Sounds like it.
That sounds like Dan's baby shower.
Sounds like a regular Wednesday night. So
yeah, just a Tuesday. Maybe Frankie. My dad's name is Frank. I think my wife has talked about naming her Frankie. I don't know if that'd be like Francesca, and we call her Frankie. Yeah. I think you might get bullied. I don't know. It's 2024. Who knows? Frankie might be a normal girl's name now.
No, I like it, man.
I like it.
It keeps it. Like, go ahead. Go ahead, Dan.
I was just gonna say every week. You should bring some names to the table. We can give you an up-down vote, and you can.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely want our Stadium Miguel listeners to name my first child for sure.
If you donate in the super chat or donate to Patreon, you get 2 votes.
Yeah.
For every dollar that you donate, I like that, Nick.
How about your Alberta policy? You want to go with Alberta? Keep it gay.
No, sure don't. Sure don't.
Brooke, think my better half, Brooke, thinks that the Gators should lean more into Alberta than Albert. She thinks Alberta is a refreshing of the Gator brand that they need right now. It's been a tough couple years for the Albert brand, they think. So just a time to maybe Alberta will bring new hope and peace and prosperity to Gator football.
I mean, I know
what did Albert do?
Yeah, Albert ain't do nothing.
I'm telling you what she said.
I'm not mad at, like, you know, bringing Alberta to the forefront and let her get some shine, but let's not put any blame on Albert, man. He's been vibing. He don't Albert coach the defense.
Good point. Gentlemen, other than Nick's fantastic news, Nick, I know you were down in Miami. We'll talk a little bit about the Gators' win over Miami again this season. But SoCal, how was your weekend? I know you were down there too, right?
Beautiful, man. I was trying to get down to catch the game. We recorded way too late. Hung down in Miami. The weather has been, I know everywhere else was kind of freezing this weekend, but South Florida was doing this South Florida thing. But I was trying to link up with Nick. We texted in the group chat a little bit. I was trying to make some plans. When I look at the tickets, it was sold out, you know, sold out affair. The resales was crazy. So me, Amon, and Zach Carter was down and we did an interview with him. We was going to pull up to the game, but the resale tickets was just crazy. So, no, I just had a good vibe, bro. Just hung out down in Miami. The baseball team did what they had to do. I did watch the whole series. You know, I got questions and takes, but I did. Ooh. I was in tune with the baseball game, bro.
Let's
Dick Cags, man. Cags is him. We'll talk about that a little later.
Cags is him.
He's dominated Miami.
Yeah, he was talking greasy too. He wasn't just dumbing it. He was looking back at the dugout. I don't know if he was talking to the first base coach or Miami's dugout, but he was talking greasy. Shout out to Cal.
I don't think he was talking to the first base coach.
Me neither.
The group chat was on fire this week between the Meek Mill information, the trip down to Miami. I was at a Lightning game Thursday. We were chatting then. Then Silk thought that I looked like Jimmy from Love Is Blind, so that was fun.
You do. Thought my whole family, like me and my wife, was watching like the last couple episodes last night, and I hadn't even said anything to the kids about it. So it was just me and the wife saying, "Yo, this guy looking like Dan." So well, Harlan comes out there. Harlan walks into the living room, and he was like, "Dad, that's the Dan guy you podcast with, isn't it?" I was like, "No, it's not." But that's what I said. And then I showed him the tweet. He's like, "Oh my God, he looks just like him. This dude looks like Dan. His mannerisms is like Dan." He started dancing. My wife was just losing her mind. She's like, "Oh my God, it's Dan."
Yeah. So the guy on the show was also dancing?
Yeah.
Good dance moves, bad dance moves?
Mediocre, but he had
that was Dan.
It was Dan.
No, come on. Here knows my Dan Sues are incredible. No, I actually have somebody that used to manage on my team that's from that area, Greensboro and the Charlotte area. His best friend is Jimmy's friend. So we heard about that he was going to be on the show about a year ago. Didn't know the results of anything, interesting show. I actually got into it a little bit this year. The girl that can't spoil anything, but the girl that he's with on the TV show right now did say in the pods that she looked like Megan Fox.
She lied.
I don't know which Megan Fox.
And Jimmy told her she lied after like everything. He told her family, like, she does not look like, stop telling her she looks like Megan Fox. Because
Megan Fox's is that a different one?
Yeah.
She's from Omaha, Nebraska.
Megan Cougar is who she was.
All right, gentlemen, let's get into the show. Got a big week behind us and a big week looking ahead. We also are bringing on Trevor Sikkema, who's been on the program multiple times, good buddy of mine. I know Nick and Silky know him quite well, too. He works for PFF. He's a draft analyst, so he's going to come on to talk about the Gators and the Combine, talk a little bit about the future of the Gators football program as well. But before we do that, let's give a quick shout-out to our friends over at Lucy. So if you are looking for a straight-to-your-door nicotine pouch, look no further than Lucy, which is 100% pure nicotine and tobacco-free. Comes in anything from 2 milligrams for those that use it infrequently, all the way up to the 12 milligrams. If you really want to, you know, a kick to the face, go look at lucy.co/stadium. Mint, apple, ice, espresso, mango, cinnamon, whatever you might be looking for, they likely have in terms of flavors. They also do a monthly subscription package where you can get 15% additionally off of your order. And you can cancel at any time. They have pouches that you might be used to. They have the breakers that we've talked about with the little flavor breaker ball in there. And they also have gum as well. So again, lucy.co/stadium will get you 20% off of your order. Always comes with free shipping and a 30-day refund. So again, lucy.co/stadium. The fine print Lucy products are only for adults of legal age. Every order is age verified. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Let me let you know a little secret. The espresso Lucy, delicious.
I'll tell you what, Nick.
Does it have caffeine in it too? Or is it just
No. Just
flavor. Just flavor?
Just a nice little nicotine hit in the morning. Mm. You can have it with your coffee. Then you get your caffeine, same flavors, all good.
I haven't cracked any of this.
You might need to be experienced to be drinking with it, but old baseball player, no problem with that.
I haven't cracked mine open yet. It's just been all my Lucy's just sitting in the box right there. I've been trying to find the right time to get into it, but I might have to try it out. You know, I might try it out.
If you're listening to this, there is another company, very popular. You can find them in gas stations. I gave a couple of the samples, a couple of the tins that they sent me to some of the guys. And now they just want me to get them more Lucy's. I said, use code Stadium, save yourself some money. But you can't get them off. You can't get them at gas stations, but certainly the milligrams are higher.
You got to call the plug.
Yeah,
I tell you what, if you are not a nicotine pouch user and you think 12 milligrams is for child's play or a good introduction,
it'll kick you right in the teeth.
Yeah, hey, kick you in the teeth.
Blake is in the comments. He put MNGA, make nicotine great again.
Make nicotine great again. Shout out to a couple people and then we'll get into the show. Joey Fitzpatrick fishing. That's a very nice, is that a barracuda or tarpon?
I can't tell,
but what?
Just said gang gang. That's all.
Oh, gang gang. First time watching Stadium and Gale live. Appreciate you watching, Joey. And Harrison Sanchez was wondering, is Nick pregnant? And the answer is yes.
Yep. It's a modern miracle of medicine. I am pregnant. Wife is super happy for me.
No, that's the politically correct way to say it.
Is it?
We're pregnant. Yeah, the men, you get to say that. Do you get leave? Stadium and Gale, we don't offer those benefits.
No,
you got to podcast through it. But does on three offer you maternity leave? Like, how does this work?
I think I do get paternity leave. I don't know that I get it. I don't know that I get it in the fall. It might be like a January. It might be during coaching search season, transfer portal season in January.
That's not good.
Nick, don't speak that into existence. Don't speak.
Well, it's assistant coach.
It's coaching season as a whole.
After a undefeated national championship season, some of the offensive coordinators and other coaches might get poached.
Joey Fitzpatrick, it was a Barracuda caught in my favorite city, which everybody knows is Jacksonville. Thanks, Joey, for joining us today. Barone 71 said Mark Light Beer Stadium was Gator Country this weekend. It did seem like from all of the videos that there was a lot of Gator fans there. Small stadium, though, right, Nick?
It's Miami Light, man. Got to keep it small.
3,500 roughly. It used to be, it was built in the 70s and like in the 80s, 90s when Miami was dominant. It was like one of the crown jewels. Like, it was very, very good at that time. And there's just no room to build. They can't make it bigger, better. There's no footprint. Good. They have used everything that they can. Alex Rodriguez gave him a bunch of money, and people were like, what did they use it for?
John Ruiz did too.
John Ruiz and Alex Rodriguez built themselves suites that they sit in for the games.
That's a good idea. And then
they added like a little indoor, you know, batting cage, pitching area, and a new weight room inside the stadium, but mainly suites. Yeah, there's just not much you can do. It is a great environment. People in South Florida love baseball. Miami has smart baseball fans. They're one of the blue bloods, I think, of college baseball.
Smart fans in Miami.
But they've been catching Kevin O'Sullivan's hands for the better part of 17 years.
He shrunk that lead that they had on our baseball program pretty fucking fast, man. Excuse my
language. Yeah, he has done that with Florida State and Miami. I think if Florida State swept Florida for the next five straight years, they would even the series.
Wow. Hmm.
Sully's standing on business, boy.
Yeah.
Big series this season against FSU. I think they're one of only five teams right now that's undefeated. That obviously won't last, but hope for some good Florida State baseball games again, obviously, with the Gators victorious. Harrison, let us know. Harrison's big watcher of the program here. Let us know that he has three kids. I didn't know that Harrison had any kids. So congratulations, Harrison, on all three. But that's the best thing that you could ask.
You want that girl three first. Girls, it's easy. Girls are easy.
Three kids in Vail? I can't even imagine what, like, lift tickets, boots, skiing.
Drop a super chat in person.
Harrison, Big Bread Sanchez.
Yeah, Big Bread.
First thing Nick thinks about is money, right? Like, bro.
Well, I know. Harrison moved to Vail not long ago, and it's ski season right now. Like, I'm wishing. Lauren and I were planning, we're like thinking about like a ski trip, and then she found out she was pregnant, and I'm like, I guess we're not skiing.
I think the Epic or Vail passes are like $1,000 for the ski season. So it's $5,000.
Yeah, we have a lot of friends that live out in Denver. So it's like we can stay with them and you can go right just like the Ajax for a day. They do that a lot. Or A-Train, A-something, A-Basin maybe. I can't remember.
A-Basin. Yeah.
It's Arapahoe, 35 minutes from Denver. They go and ski there all the time. We love Breckenridge, but don't think skiing is in the cards for me.
Not with that attitude. So the Gators did announce that they filled out their coaching staff with what we had told you guys was likely going to be a second offensive line coach. They announced the hiring of Jonathan DeCoster as the second offensive line coach. He's going to be assuming the role that Darnell Stapleton had, and he is coming over from the Cleveland Browns. So a little bit of a backstory here. Four-year starter at Louisiana, pre-Billy Napier. Then he spent three seasons as a graduate assistant tight end coach at LSU. He also worked at Old Dominion and was the offensive line coach at West Virginia State. He was also a graduate assistant at Nevada.
So that is the news. He's been an offensive analyst for the Cleveland Browns. So gentlemen, talk a little bit about your thoughts. I know Zach Albaverde put a little bit of commentary behind this hiring as well that we can go over, but what are your thoughts on the addition of Jonathan DeCoster, if you have an opinion, of course?
We're still young. Do like to hire some NFL experience. Don't mind youth. It's just we have a very young staff. Yeah. But I like to hire on paper, considering, you know, the time of the year we are hiring. Like right now, there's not a lot of candidates that are looking to upseat themselves and, you know, and look for another job, especially in the college world. But considering all the variables around what we had to do and it's right before spring camp, I didn't want to go into spring with, you know, not enough people on staff. That just gives me Willie Taggart vibes, right? If we don't have a full staff. So glad we got a full staff. The guy, I think he's going to be good on the trail. There's not a lot of evidence there as far as like prior recruiting, but, you know, being a young black or minority on the recruiting trail in Florida, I think that's going to pay us dividends. And everything's not about race, but recruiting matters and relating to people matters. You lose Stapleton, a brother. Bringing in another brother to put right beside Sale, I think is a legitimate move. We'll see how well the offensive line performs this spring and in the fall. But considering everything around it, you can't be mad at the hire, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's really young staff in terms of, you know, Power Five experience. I don't know. I think I'll reserve judgment. I just don't know that Florida got better on the offensive line. Or better enough. So I think you need to coach him up. So got your work cut out for you, coach.
We got OCs and we got two offensive line coaches. So progress.
But I think we even talked about it. Like Billy has made a point of it every time he's been asked that he thinks having two offensive line coaches is important. Thinks you have 15, 16, 17 offensive linemen. You should have two people coaching them. He said it from day one, and then we've continued to ask him about it. So I thought maybe you don't rush the hire and you just promote
Ryan O'Hara.
Which then would allow Billy to kind of move around a little bit more and not just stay with the quarterbacks as much. But it was always going to be an offensive line coach, I think.
I think it's on par. I'm gonna be short here, Dan, but I think it's on par with when you bring Stapleton on too. He didn't have a boatload of experience outside of, you know, playing in the game, but as far as coaching experience, he didn't have a ton. And I think you bring in somebody that's on par with that as far as experience wise as being your second O-line coach.
Right. So obviously some concern just about the amount of time that he has spent at the college level. I think he's had one on the field coaching season under his belt. So definitely some cause for just trepidation from my end. I know that Zach Albaverde gave some additional insight into it, said that Billy Napier was very high on his experience with the Browns and being able to learn under a really good offensive line in 21 and 22. He was around the LSU team when they won their national title as well, is from South Florida, has some connections down there. They also mentioned the name that Edwin Pata was another name that was being considered for the role. He was previously the offensive line coach at Florida A&M. He's worked at Miami for the last 4 years, most recently as a senior offensive analyst. I know that he also mentioned that there's not a lot of coaches out there that potentially want to make that move to be one of two coaches now coaching the offensive line. So if you're looking for that individual, you need somebody that understands where their role is and what their responsibilities are as well. And sometimes that can limit your pool when somebody want my total control. And then obviously you have to look at how does that person interact with that person? What kind of experience does that person bring to counteract the other person that has that role? So having kind of a two-headed monster on the offensive line, even if it's tiered in terms of responsibility, a two-headed monster, it can be challenging to fill that role. So again, we don't know. We'll see. Again, my biggest concern is just the amount of experience of on-the-field coaching. But again, you know, we'll see. And Obviously, your great coaches had to start somewhere, and this could be, you know, a diamond in the rough. Obviously, working under Bill Callahan with the Browns is something that you want to see as well.
Real quick aside, you just said something mentioning his South Florida ties. Like, this staff needs to get down to South Florida. Like, Andy Jean, is Andy Jean the only signee they've gotten?
Man, it's crazy that you said
Tri-County in 3 years. Like, first year I gave him a pass. Like, listen, they've got this. They were in Louisiana. It's a whole different level of athlete you're recruiting, but they want – I mean, they had guys – 4 stars, you know, asking them to do wind sprints in the backyard year one. Hey, send us this film. So, like, I get it. They want to do their due diligence. So that first staff I gave them, or the first class I gave them a pass, like, yeah, these guys are familiar with. But, like, some point, like, hey, buddy, you need to hit 75 south. Hit Turnpike south. There's talent down in West Palm, Dade, Broward.
For sure. You need the relationships NIL is one thing, but some guys – that has some relationship that got us the Andy Jeans, and I know we got some off the field guys that we're going to talk about that exited the past couple of weeks. But you lose some of those guys. I'm forgetting the guy. I think Hypolite or what's his name was. That ended up getting us Andy Jeans.
Yeah,
correct. So you need the relationships as well to be able to get down there and have a legit opportunity. And a shot at landing these guys on the trail, but we're just missing some of those relationships. And you know, I don't know what the answer to that is, but yeah, to get down.
We are a biased show. We are a biased show. All three of us from South Florida, but like that doesn't change the fact that there's dogs down there.
Skill position is what I would say. Cause I think South Florida is lacking with the trenches. Quarterback is not really our bag. You know,
we got speed and space position, down
DBs, wide receivers, a linebacker here, there, but I think skill position is our back down here. But I like the way they recruit the trenches out of Georgia, Texas, like getting a little flexible with that type of stuff. But I'm with you. Zach said a little bit of the same thing this weekend when I sat down with him, is we missing some of those South Florida dogs, and he's a boy from Tampa. So
Yeah, no, just looking it up, Nick, and you are exactly right. Outside of Andy Jean, the Gators have signed one person from Fort Myers, which is not South Florida, on the other side of the coast there, and then Sarasota. But everything else seems to be Tampa, Orlando, and North. Yeah, definitely not a lot in South Florida. It's an area where the Gators have had a lot of success with their players. And obviously there's a lot of great talent that comes out of South Florida. It is one of the hotbeds. Broward and Miami-Dade and West Palm are amongst the hottest counties when it comes to NFL draft prospects.
Urban didn't camp out down here when he won, though, to keep it a bean. Like, his best players didn't come from South Florida.
For sure. That's true. Nathaniel Rogers says patience and loyalty is how you run over South Florida. I think relationships and bags.
Bags.
Bags over patience and loyalty.
South Florida is for sale, baby.
I don't think, having lived and grown up in South Florida, I think the one thing that I see South Florida completely lacking is loyalty in every stretch of every part of life down there. Right. Except for family. Other than that, there is 0% loyalty in the entire Tri-County area.
I was talking to a buddy who coaches high school baseball up in North Florida. And he's like, man, these kids are able to transfer and go whatever high school. These zones don't matter. And I was like, buddy, that was normal in 2005, 6, and 7 when I was in high school. We had dads who had cheap apartments in different districts. So their kid could go to a different school, and then they would get ratted on, and the dad would have to go like buy furniture, rent furniture to put in to the apartments, so, like, they wouldn't get caught. I was like, we've been having the transfer portal in South Florida at high school baseball level, not even football.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's. I know we got Trevor Sikkema coming on in probably 10 minutes or so. Gators basketball unfortunately loses to South Carolina. They blew a 10-point lead. In the second half, South Carolina is obviously a good basketball program. Team came out, said, you know, they're going to bounce back. They did have a win over Mizzou in a hard fought game that, you know, I think Mike White loses. But you know, the Gators right now sit fourth or fifth, whatever you're looking at from a bracketology standpoint. Right now, they are plus 1700 to make the Final Four. If you believe in this team, that's a good value bet. but that's at about a 5.5% chance of making the Final Four for the Gators there. Nick, let's talk a little bit about baseball. You were down there. Gators win 2 of 3 against the Miami Hurricanes. So give us a little bit of a highlight reel of that matchup.
Yeah,
Bass, I think popping, man. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of Gator fans down there. There always is. I mean, South Florida has a great alumni base, Florida alumni base down there. I think obviously the weekend MVP is going to be Jack Caglione. He went 7-for-14, slugged .929, 533 on base percentage. And then,
Nick, if I understand that slugging percentage in .929 is 1,000 is a double, right? And 2,000 is a home run.
That
I understand slugging.
It's a calculation. An idiot. Slugging percentage is weighting extra base hits more than singles. So it's calculating all of your extra base hits versus your hits as a total. 900 is very, very good.
Yeah.
Of his seven hits, I think. Yeah. Okay. Then Sunday. So last year, Florida won on Friday, lost on Saturday, just like this year. And then they throw Jack on Sunday. Last year, Sunday against Miami was his best start of his career. He topped that this week. He goes 6 innings, gave up just 3 hits, no runs, walked 2, and struck out a career high 11. Also hit a home run and went 3-for-5 on Sunday. And as Silk said, my man was talking greasy.
Big grease.
We had some web gems. Ty Evans had a great play. Armando Albert, who is a South Florida kid, went up to Santa Fe. He had a great play on Friday night. So I think Florida's good. When I look at Florida, and they'll have D1 rankings come out today, and Florida will probably stay in the top 10. I think they're a regional host. I don't know that they're a top 8 seed, you know, a super regional national seed. They're really young, and we're seeing that on the pitching mound. You're going to see those guys struggle. Luke McNeely.
A lot of batters got hit this weekend.
Yeah, yeah. So
on both sides.
Florida is Kevin O'Sullivan. We can't talk to him without him complaining about how many hitters counts that their pitchers are getting into, whether it's 2-0, 2-1, 3-1. Right. The home runs that Miami hit, Torres hit a home run on Friday, 2-0 count or 3-0 count. He hit another home run on Saturday. It's a 3-0 count. You know what is coming on those counts. You have to throw fastball. You're not trying to get behind or walk. And Kevin O'Sullivan is a huge preacher of first pitch strike, 2 out of the first 3 being strikes. So Florida's walking way more guys than they need to right now. That's something they need to get in control.
We ended last season with a lot of those vibes, right? If I'm not mistaken, like the game we lost.
They're walking guys at a much more alarming clip early on in the year than they were last year. I thought Cade Fisher on Friday was better, but still getting behind batters. Liam Peterson, who I was high on and am still high on, looked a little bit like a freshman. Gave up 5 runs in the first 2 innings, but for an 19-year-old kid, you'd like to see him respond. He goes in the 3rd, 4th, 5th, throws up 0s, keeps you in the game. He's going to be good. It was his first real road start. He did start against UNF, but that's UNF. So I liked what I saw from Florida. They responded well on Sunday after a loss. This was their first time going away for a weekend. They'll have some big road series at Vanderbilt, at Arkansas, at LSU, or I think LSU actually comes here, maybe. I can't remember. But they're good. They're a good young team. My question again will be what happens in May? It's a really long season, and when you're relying on these freshmen, at some point they're going to hit a wall. So just keeping them focused, healthy, and getting them to the later part of the season. But Florida's going to be good. They're going to hit a ton of home runs, and they're going to strike out a ton. And that's kind of where baseball is right now. Like
feast or famine.
Yeah, like some teams play small ball. Florida had a safety squeeze on Sunday, but like that's not what they do. They're going to hit the ball really far.
Yeah. Chicks dig the long ball, Nick.
Jack Caglione hit a single this weekend with an exit velocity of 100 and 22 miles an hour.
Himothy.
He's just, let me see. That's like Giancarlo Stanton levels of exit velocity.
Chicks dig the long ball, Harrison.
Game two. That's why he's got three kids, you know? Go ahead.
So 122.4 is the hardest ball hit in StatCast era in Major League history, and Jack hit one 122.0. Now, we're talking about wood bats in the majors. He's got an aluminum, but that just puts in perspective how hard the ball he hit was.
Now, game two, I seen some I seen a strikeout for like a delay of batting or something weird like that. Yeah. Bro. I don't know if that was home cooking. Like, how regular is that? And like, how does that rule work?
It's interesting because they implemented a pitch clock and some crews.
That's crazy. Like a shot clock.
They have it. So like in the majors now, the batter has to be in the box. The pitcher has to be on the rubber. And the pitcher can't pitch until they make eye contact. Like we're in the 1700s and we're dueling. But you'll see this if you watch like highlights and stuff. So the batter wasn't in the box, but the pitcher also wasn't on the rubber. So
a box rubber situation.
This is getting
That's
crazy.
Why Nick guys get never mind.
This is a family show, fellas.
It used to be. So Florida's argument was he wasn't in the box. The guy wasn't on the rubber. You can't call. So there, if the pitch clock violation is called on the batter, it's a strike. If the pitch clock violation, if the pitcher doesn't release the pitch or start his windup before the clock runs down, it's an automatic ball. So because it was a two strike count when the batter was called for a pitch clock violation, that's a strike. Strike three, you're out.
Do they have a clock they look at, like a play clock, like other sports? How does this work?
They got a shot clock. And I think it's 20 seconds.
I need him
to box and rubber clock.
I like it. How does our bullpen rank with like the rest of the conference?
It's still early. I think right now the cream of the SEC is going to be. Texas A&M looks awesome. Arkansas looks awesome. They've got a great pitching staff. Florida's bullpen. You've got Brandon Neely, who's been a little bit shaky. He was up for the preseason reliever of the year award. Ryan Slater is kind of the guy they go to, another junior, in a bunch of different situations. Whether if they need four innings out of the bullpen, they'll go to him. If they need someone just to get you from the seventh inning to the ninth inning to get to your closer, they'll go to him. And then they've got a bunch of freshmen, like Luke McNeely is a guy they're going to go to. Riley Whitmer is a guy they're going to go to. Robert Satin's a guy they're going to go to. They're all freshmen. So they're going to take their lumps. They're all really, really talented. But those are the guys that I'm wondering, hey, how do they hold up over the course of the year? But I'd like to see them face some adversity early. These are guys you have to think that if you're playing baseball at the University of Florida, you haven't faced a lot of adversity. You've been dominating high school pitching. Grayson Smith, thanks, Braxton. You've been dominating.
Brax.
You've been dominating high school. So, like, you get to this level, now you're 18, and we're still dealing with COVID. Like, we still have 24-year-olds on college rosters. Yeah. And I don't care how good you are at 18. There are some grown men with gray in their beard still playing college baseball. Yeah. So you're going to face some adversity. So you'd rather see them do that, deal with it, learn it in March than, you know, in the SEC tournament or the last weekend of the SEC regular season.
I dig it.
Awesome. Thanks, Nick. We got our friend Trevor Sikkema joining us. But before we do that, let's give a quick shout out to our friends over at Alumni Hall. If you are looking for anything Florida Gator related, whether it is t-shirts, polos, accessories, grilling supplies, tailgate supplies, whatever it might be for a gift, for a holiday, for a boss's day, whatever it might be, go to alumnihall.com or go visit them in Gainesville, right on Archer Road, right off of I-75. No better place to get everything and anything that you would want related to the Florida Gators. Let them know that Stadium and Gale sent you. But again, alumnihall.com or Alumni Hall on Archer Road in Gainesville.
joining us, big friend of the program, good buddy in real life as well. The three sides minimum leader when it comes to eating barbecue, when it comes to anything related to the NFL draft, the NFL draft combine, our friend Trevor Sikkema. Trevor,
thank you for covering that gray head of hair you have.
You know, you
let the gray flourish, brother.
You know, I figured I'd wear the barbecue hat today since I knew the Dan was going to introduce me like that, you know, because we're such good friends, you know, we're connected. I knew that it was coming. So I decided to wear the barbecue hat today.
It has fire. I like it.
Well, I didn't. Well, Trevor has hair, which this is a
it's incredible show, hair.
A luscious show that could use a sponsorship from Hims or some Lumen. Sort of hair supplement. Yeah, I don't sure.
Hey, man, like. To all the ball brothers out there, man, like your life matters as well, man. You don't need it. Dan's coming, Dan's coming on board soon, too.
Yeah, like, coming on. Soon, yeah. The internet wants it 2 years ago, you know? Trevor, thanks so much for joining us. I don't know if I said this. He works for Pro Football Focus. He's worked all over the place when it comes to the combine. I think he put this was his seventh combine that he's covered in Indianapolis. He did some TV hits and everything else. Yeah. I mean, this guy is a rising superstar, is a superstar already, continuing to rise. Trevor, want to talk about the combine. Gators only represented by two people at the combine this year, but Ricky Pearsall seems to be doing anything and everything that he can to show that he belongs high up on the draft mock boards and then hopefully by an NFL team here in the next couple of weeks. But Trevor, give us your insights on the Florida Gators at the combine. There's only two, so this shouldn't take very long.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, Ricky is just, he's dominating the conversation for me because he's the guy who's on the field doing a lot of different workouts. And I mean, he just, it's so impressive, man. And I tweeted this out afterwards. I don't know if there's a single prospect who helped themselves more, I think, since the end of draft season than Ricky Pearsall. You know, you talk about, okay, well, you take the whole year into account. Jaden Daniels is probably like a day three pick going into the year. Now he might go top three overall. So I can't say over the entire calendar, but Ricky's just had such a fantastic draft season. I mean, you go into the year, he's got really good tape. I think he's improved every single year. This past year, his chemistry with Graham Mertz is fantastic. I think when people looked at him, they said, okay, this is probably just, you know, like a regular old slot receiver, you know, somebody, a mid-round pick, third, fourth round, probably early day three guy. He goes to the Senior Bowl, and I think a lot of people got more eyes on what is in his Gators tape. He just kind of was able to break the narrative a little bit that he was just a slot receiver because
it's different when you see it in person.
Totally. Yeah. And look, I mean, he's not like, shoot, actually, I was going to say he's not a blazer, but the combine testing actually shocked me a little bit, you know? And so I thought he was faster than he was given credit for. But when,
what'd you say? Deceptively quick.
Yeah, deceptively.
Lunch pail guy, first in, last out.
I said deceptively quick.
Coach.
Yeah, real coach's son, you know. Every coach wants him in his locker room. There's no doubt about it.
I'm gonna let you guys get that off.
No, but he is, you know, when he goes to Mobile,
we don't get the slot silk in the racial draft. He might be wide receiver three.
He's also playing safety for us. He's
he has to. He has to. We're starving out here. You know, we need bodies. So, look, you see him in Mobile. He testing. He plays very, very well. I think the contested catches absolutely stood out for him. What he's able to do as a vertical receiver really stood out for him. I love the Senior Bowl in particular and the Shrine Bowl as well. They both do a good job of this. They put these guys in situations that they're, I don't want to say like uncomfortable with, but it's not necessarily a streamlined strength, right? If a guy hasn't played a lot of press coverage in college, well, guess what they're going to do at the All-Star event? They're going to put you in press coverage. They're going to want to see what it is. So for Ricky Pearsall, everybody's like, okay, we already know you can win from the slot. Play on the outside a little bit, and let's even send you vertical. So let's see what we got as a vertical receiver too. I think that he played really well when he was in Mobile, and then, of course, the combine. Whether it was the broad jump, the vertical jump, the 40-yard dash, the agility three-cone and short shuttle drills as well, like, this dude was elite. Like, genuinely, he was an elite athlete. I think the lowest percentile score that he had for one of his tests of the combine, and this is measured against all wide receivers who have kind of come through since the year is 1999, 89th percentile was the lowest. Like, everything else was high 80s or low 90s. There was, I think, two that were tied at 89 and then a couple of scores that were in the low 90s. So it just shows you, man. I mean, he's a fantastic athlete. We already know the toughs that he plays with. I think that he was, like I said, going into the draft season, people were probably like, all right, yeah, like, let me get Ricky Pearsall as a steal at the beginning of day three. We're talking beginning of day two now. Like, I think this dude could absolutely be a top 50 pick. I've talked about him as an option at pick number 33, even for the Carolina Panthers to start the second round. I think there's a lot of teams at the beginning of the second round that would love to get him. So I feel like after this combine performance, that's his range.
Let's touch on Ricky Pearsall's numbers real quick. 42-inch vertical leap, which was third amongst wide receivers. 10'9" in the broad jump, which was eighth place in the event. He ran a 4.41. And Trevor, I know that you mentioned one of the statistics there. There is something called the relative athletic score, which ranks your athletic skill from the NFL Combine out of all 3,090 wide receivers that have done it from 1987 until today. Ricky Pearsall ranked 70th. So when it comes to just being a combine warrior and just really showing who he is, Ricky Pearsall really showed out in the combine. Kingsley Aguakin was the other guy for the Gators there. How did Kingsley perform?
So Kingsley, I don't believe worked out.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, I got to check to see if he did anything on here.
Yeah.
I think he was just there
maybe doing interviews.
Yeah, probably. I didn't necessarily hear anything from him at Combine, but he is somebody who participated in the Senior Bowl as well. You know, they're looking for some versatility for him because I feel like he could have benefited because he had another year of eligibility. I think, and so I feel like he could have benefited from coming back to school. When he was at the Senior Bowl, it was an up and down week for him. I mean, he struggled a little bit when he was there, and that's not to say that just is a kiss of death to an NFL career. It absolutely isn't, but I think it pretty much solidifies that he's going to be a mid to late day three pick. Didn't really hear anything at the combine to kind of change that. He really needs to kind of just master every position along the offensive line to, in best case scenario, be one of those swing players where you can play on the right or the left side. You could play interior, but you could also play on the outside. Like his best path for the NFL is to, I just think, master a lot of that versatility and try to get that path. So
yeah, I think I'm on record saying I don't know that he needed to come back to Florida, but he needed to come back to college. Listen, you make the best decision for you and your family. So he decided to declare, but I don't know that I would play him at tackle. I think you can. His best case is like, hey, I can play both guards and I can snap the ball for you.
Right.
And maybe that's, you know, when you're getting down to 51, 52, and 53, that person that can play special teams or has some position versatility and saves your roster spot, that's how you end up making a roster.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. He's 32.5-inch arms. Obviously, you're not going to play him a tackle long term, but he is. He's somebody who is probably going to get a spot as an interior versatile player. But again, like Dirk Cutter, he was a former head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He would say this all the time. Like, if you don't have a starting position, you basically need to play all five spots for us to keep you on the active game day roster. Like, we have to be able to at least have some faith in you that you're not just going to get worked at one of those other spots. And so, yeah, of course, like the reserve guys, you carry some reserve guards, just carry some reserve tackles, all that kinds of stuff. But the guys who climb the depth chart, that next man in line kind of a thing, is just kind of how you're able to stick on the NFL. So I agree. Likely not a tackle, but as much versatility as you could show, that's got to be his main goal at this point.
I got a question about Ricky. Like, Ricky had a very good season. I think he displayed great route running, toughness, ability to catch the ball, great hands, goes to the Senior Bowl, cooks up the competition, leaves early because he's just cooking everybody, had a great combine. First question is, does he even, like if he does do a pro day, like, what does he participate in? And what from his game, in your opinion, that he's lacking?
I wouldn't do a pro day if I was him. I mean, there's not really a reason for it. I mean, I'd stay in, you know, relative good shape just because you want to. And obviously you're going to shake a lot of hands with some guys at the combine. So like, you want to look good, you want to stay in shape, but he performed so well. Maybe the shuttle drills, but again, like they're not as stressful on the body when it comes to training, but he already showed these fantastic there. So honestly, if I'm Ricky, I could stand on basically every single number that I have at the combine. So I don't really see a need for him to work out too much. And then I just think that, again, kind of what we were saying about the Senior Bowl, the thing that I liked that I saw there in Mobile is they used him more as a vertical guy and not just in the middle of the scene, like as an outside guy too. So it's not something that I don't think that he can do. I just would love to see more of that outside receiver vertical threat profile, because very clearly from his combine numbers, the dude can do it. I mean, he's got the athleticism to do it. We know he can get off press coverage. We know that he's got a variety of different really great releases. That's how he's such a great two-way go player when he gets that space in the slot. He's already mastered that part of it. Just how much of a complete receiver can you be at the next level? He's got great contested catches as well, even outside of the crazy one-handed catch, which I asked him about when he was at his podium. And I was like, what was life like after you made that one-handed catch? And he was just like, it was a lot different. it was a lot different after that. And, you know, he just talked about how crazy it was with everything blowing up. But whether it's one-handed catches, two-handed catches, he's a tough dude at the catch point. So when you look at his size, he's about 190. He's about 6'1". You don't normally put receivers like that on the outside consistently, but the ones that do, you do because you have a feeling that when you do throw up those 50-50 balls near the sideline, they're going to compete for it, and he does. So that, to me, to answer your question, is all I would really like to see more from him is just more of those reps vertically, and I'd love for a team to give him the opportunity to do it because I think he could play it really, really well. That's ultimately why I think he is a top 50 player in this class.
It's kind of hard.
We got to ask our producers, but it was like 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago, I was like, I pegged Ricky as a low 4.4 guy. And then he jumped first. And when I saw 42 and I saw the broad jump, because that stuff just shows explosion. And right. Like, if you have dunks, a good vert man. And a good, yeah, if you have a good vert, well, first off, white men can jump 42.
I had never seen that dunk video before this.
Yeah, I knew you could see explosion from stuff like that. So yeah. I had him pegged at a 4.4 as well, like mid 4.4 to low 4.4, just from like seeing him explode and do 360 dunks and a lot of stuff he was doing in the offseason and in the social media clicks. He's explosive, bro.
Dude, when I saw that dunk, my jaw was on the floor. Like, he made that shit look easy.
For sure.
So
gotta get him up to Jacksonville. I know AR's up
there. No.
AR's up there. He's got a bad wing. Dan, please. AR's got a wing on the men, but give me a little dunk contest. Florida Gator dunk contest with Ricky and AR.
Every single NFL team that saw that dunking video is like, hey, I know it's going to be really tempting. No basketball. No more of that. We're not
going to get that in the contract. Let's just slide that fine print in there.
Yeah, that was like, I think it was AR's dunk who, like, I saw him dunking like a pickup game or something. And he dunks it pretty hard and his body kind of comes in sideways and he lands just like hard underneath the basket.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I guarantee he got a text from Jim Irsay himself, where it was just like, all right, we're done with that. We're not picking up a basketball ever again.
There's videos of AR in slides doing backflips on like cement after a football game. And it's just like, hey man, maybe not.
Dude, that's always the part. Like when I'm watching the combine, they make a big deal out of this because everybody goes crazy for it and they'll show it on the broadcast and everything. But like Romo Dunze after the wide receiver drills, whatever, he's doing a backflip in the end zone. And if I'm every NFL team, I'm contacting NFL Network and I'm like, stop showing this stuff on TV. Yep. We you just ran a 4.39 at 215 pounds. Like, we're locking you in as a top 10 pick. Don't do a backflip in the end zone. We don't need to see. It's like the Clemson running down the hill thing, which I think is just absolutely wild that they still do. How are we doing this? How are we doing this? I don't understand.
I got a question for all y'all guys. Like, what in the hell was Herm Edwards doing with Jaden Daniels, brother, Ricky Pearsall, and Johnny Wilson? Was he like fired, drunk at the wheel?
That's what he was
crazy.
Doing.
He had all that talent.
He like Nick said, he was getting fired, man. I mean, that's crazy. That's crazy. Now, I mean, look, Jaden Daniels wasn't who he was back then. You know, he's very, very young. You could tell that he was at the beginning stages of his growth. So it's hard to, you know, totally hold that against him. But still, like, you got to be able to keep your talented guys. Like, even if the version of Jaden Daniels that Arizona State got was just that first year of LSU Jaden Daniels, like, that would have been worth it. You absolutely keep that college football player. Ricky has been fantastic. Johnny Wilson too. I mean, people don't people aren't, I don't think people are talking about it enough, Johnny Wilson's combine day, because his numbers relative to the rest of the guys in the class aren't like, oh, top five broad jump, top five 40, whatever. I mean, he ran what, a 4.53 at 6 foot six, 237 pounds. What'd you say?
It's a Gator show.
It's true. It's true. It's true.
Sorry, stunk it up, man.
All right. I'll keep it down. Yeah, I'll keep it down. No, but it is. It's fine. Yeah. To your question, like, I don't know what Arizona State was doing. Even if you just looked at Johnny Wilson, you'd be like, all right, well, I'm not letting this guy get out of the building. But
for sure.
They did.
Now, he performed well at the combine, considering his size. He has hands issues, in my opinion. But overall, like, Herm Edwards was drunk at the wheel for sure.
Yeah. Trevor, anybody on the Gators, and I know it's early, we are prognosticating into the 2025 draft. Anybody that you're looking at the Florida Gators? I mean, I know, you know, Jason Marshall is a guy that was a potential first round draft pick before this season started. Obviously, Graham Mertz is going to be 24 years old and maybe not the prototypical NFL quarterback. Montrell Johnson at running back. Who do you see as some potential people, maybe Jake Slaughter, people to look out for the Gators next year?
Yeah, I mean, the first three names that you named would have been the ones that I'm paying the most attention to. I mean, I like Montrell, man. I think that he runs really, really hard. And now, I don't think that that's going to become anything more than like a priority day three pick just because there's so many different running backs. But like, still, I mean, he's strong as hell, and he's going to be somebody who I think a lot of teams could convince themselves, all right, we're going to have this guy as an RB3 to start. You know, maybe he'll work his way into a committee. You know, maybe he'll be our power back in short yardage situations. And I think he showcased that both Louisiana and Florida. So he's one of the strongest dudes that I remember even scouting for this past class when it came to the running back class. And I think that's still going to exist next year. Jason Marshall, man, I know a lot of people had an
interesting
him,
case.
Yeah, I know a lot of people had him as a potential first round pick. I remember watching him over the summer and I was like, okay, I see why people like him. Obviously, the size speed combination, that's what you're looking for, that athletic potential. But he had a long way to go before he was really a shutdown corner. And there were times when it felt like he just wasn't anticipating the route well enough. You know, he wasn't like he was giving too much space on wide receivers. And it's those little nuances of the game where you go, man, you're so big and tall and fast. I figured that you would be a little bit more of a risk taker. You would be able to anticipate these routes a little bit better and just be really, really sticky in coverage. But we didn't see him take that next step last year. I'm hoping we see it from him this year. But that was kind of, I feel like if he would have declared, I think that because this is such a loaded cornerback class, he probably would have been a day three pick as well. I know he would not be satisfied with that given how talented he is. So it makes sense that he comes back and you're obviously hoping for a bounce back year from him. Mertz is somebody who I wasn't really taking seriously at all whatsoever before this past year when it comes to the NFL draft. I thought that his tape at Wisconsin was fine, but mostly like very conservative. And it's just like, man, you just don't draft a lot of quarterbacks that high who kind of had that play style. And for Napier, he showed a lot more of a aggression to his game. Like he was very much going for those big throws. He wasn't shying away from those big moments, whether it was on first down to set the tone, whether it was on third down to pick up a key first down. Like Mertz was very, very confident last year in Napier's offense, and you love to see it. And I think that he really, really helped himself out. It makes sense that he came back. I think he absolutely should have come back. But you're in a situation this year where, yeah, okay, sure, he's a little bit older, but I don't really care for quarterbacks. And I don't think the NFL really is going to either. These quarterbacks can play until their mid to late 30s now at this point. So if you're in your mid 20s and you're coming out of college, but you're a really polished, confident product, NFL's going to draft you like it. So we'll see. I think that he's turned into a really good player, and I'm excited to see what he's able to cook up this year and another year of this offense.
I think he'll have a really, really good year. I keep going back to transfer portal quarterbacks in second years of systems. And obviously you've got like the Burrows and the Kyler Murrays and even Baker Mayfield. And I think he will have a better year. I think Florida's more talented on defense. I just don't know who he has on offense really. But
outside of Eugene Wilson, basically.
Which, you know, I keep making the comparison back to 2020. Like when Kyle Pitts went down, Kadarius Toney was much easier to stop when you could focus on him and not have to worry about Kyle Pitts. And I think Ricky and Trey played off of each other last year. And it's like, hey, if you're going to double team Ricky, well, Graham Mertz will just pad those completion stats with that little shovel pass, which counts as a forward pass, and let Trey go running with it. I really like Graham. I think he's a really, really tough player. He quickly became a leader. I think he would be like a day three pick for me, though. I don't know that you're using a second or third round pick on him. But the NFL has two types of teams. Teams with franchise quarterbacks. Correct. And teams looking for one.
Correct.
And that's it. So you might get a team that says, listen, shoot, we'll keep drafting quarterbacks until we find one.
Yep. I agree. I think that, we even saw that with Trask, right? I mean, Trask, I didn't think was going to be getting drafted as highly as he did, but the NFL was like, hey, we got to take a chance on this guy. He's big. He was productive. And I think that could be the case with Mertz. I think if Mertz has another really great year on the offensive side of the ball, especially if, like you said, it's kind of without some of the weapons that he had the previous year, he's going to get even more credit in that offense. And I think then 2 years in a row, teams love to be able to say, okay, multi-years of good production. Mm-hmm. Like even if it's only 2 years, they love to just say, right, okay, he had multiple years of really good production, especially in the SEC. And because here's the thing about Mertz, even if Mertz has the same year that he had last year, it will mean more because it's 2 years in a row and because of who is on the offense. So he doesn't have to have a Burrow type year to start really being an interesting name within these NFL draft conversations,
especially when you look at the schedule that they'll be playing. Well, can we talk about your can we talk about your Tampa Bay hostage holders? What are they doing to our guy?
Your
Tampa Bay hostage holders put Kyle Trask in some bunker. They're gonna pay Baker Mayfield like he's Patrick Mahomes. Kyle Trask has been in bubble wrap. Can we blow the dust off of Kyle Trask and give him a chance?
He had the chance last year. What do you mean? He was in a quarterback battle last year. Look,
I don't know, Trevor.
You think it was rigged? You guys
thought it was rigged. Yeah,
disgusting behavior by Tampa.
It was racist, Trevor. It was racist.
I don't know if I'm allowed to agree, but somehow I agree.
Hey, we gotta get Kyle out of Tampa. It's just gross negligence by the entire organization.
Man, he got the best job in the world, bro. Like, dude, just sit and be a backup and collect them
in Tampa Bay too, of all places.
Yeah, it's true.
He's robbing, man. It's nice out there.
Ryan Griffin made a real nice life for himself as QB2/QB3 in Tampa for like 8 years. Never saw the field. Never. I think he took like a handful of regular season snaps. Cashed in some couple of yearly checks of over $1 million. My guy's clearing seven figures.
Chase Daniel has a Super Bowl ring and no arthritis and millions of dollars.
Bro, and now he's on NFL Network. Like now
just
he's
hanging out.
Now he's just giving takes for fun because he
there's probably nobody that's watched more film than Chase Daniel. You know what I mean?
Chase Daniel's true. Like, what are you guys? Yeah, he doesn't have about? To do football anything so but safe. Watch film. No. Football's such a safe sport. And like, yeah, Chase, I bet it is. You got a splinter on your finger from holding a clipboard.
The show Blue Mountain State taught us that the best job in the world is, in fact, the backup quarterback.
For sure.
It's actually fired head football coach at the Division I level, but second.
Especially at the University of Florida. Backup.
Yeah, yeah. No, they pay well to fire you at Florida.
Yeah, overpay, over buyout. Trevor, we're going to get you out of here, brother. By the way, if anybody doesn't know and follows Trevor, Trevor's a big barbecue fan. Three sides minimum, Trevor, let everybody know what three sides minimum means and why, because I think it's a really good reason. It's not just to gorge yourself with food, but there's a reason why.
Correct. It's not a gluttonous proposition. Okay. The reason why we do three sides minimum is because if you go to a barbecue place, first and foremost, a lot of barbecue places are like homegrown recipes, right? It's like, okay, I got this from my grandpa. He gave it to my dad. He gave it to my mom, whatever. And we had this recipe for years. It's one of the best in the city, one of the best in the area, whatever it is. So you got these family homegrown recipes that you want to try. Well, when you go to barbecue places and you get a plate, what is it? Okay. It comes one meat and two sides. All right. Everybody has their two sides that they go to. If I asked all you guys, all right, what are your two favorite barbecue sides? You all would say something. And there's a good chance that every single barbecue place has that. So you're already locking down those two sides. You're not giving yourself the freedom to see another side. There might be a great homegrown recipe where you go, damn, that cornbread actually looks really good. Mm. Or whoa, mm. I normally don't get beans, but those beans look really, really good. Like whatever it is. So it gives you the freedom to, when you walk up to a barbecue place and you see something that might be really special at just that place, they might have a recipe that is all their own. You can still get your two sides that you love, but then it also allows you to try some family homegrown Southern recipes in the form of a third side. So that's why we do three sides minimum, because barbecue is a unique cuisine that is very, very special when it comes to those homegrown recipes. And I want other people to experience that every time they go eat barbecue.
Man, that's how I found fried okra.
There we go.
That's how I found okra was a three sides minimum.
Look at you.
I prefer my okras and black eyed peas, but I'm rocking with you. And as far as the size, I do not trust people that get double fries the size.
Nah, I can't do that. You can't be doing that. There's too many places in the world where you can also order fries. If you want to order fries as one side, it's fine. Yeah, that's the spirit of the rule. You get one, try something else. Try one of the other recipes. Don't try the slaw,
man. The slaw may be all right.
Thank you.
If you're not from the South, and if you're not from the South and you find yourself in the South, banana pudding is always an option. That's on the side. You just throw some banana pudding on your plate. Where was the place you went?
On the dinner plate? That's
just plopping it on there.
it comes in.
No wafers, Nick.
Listen, vegan Silk, we're not asking your barbecue opinions anyway.
Man, if you put banana pudding beside the collard greens. I am judging.
Put the cup on the tray. What kind of heathen are you?
I can just see it now. Nick just. It's like the lady from Billy Madison with Sloppy Joe's, and Nick just banana pudding sloppy on his plate. Oh my God. All right, Trevor, we're going to get you out of here. I think you're getting married pretty soon, aren't you, brother?
Your guess is as good as mine. Okay, no, I'm kidding. All right. We're taking our time, brother. We're making sure whatever we do,
Trevor, we do it our way.
Is that an engagement ring you're wearing?
It is. Yes.
So men wear engagagement rings now, okay?
Dude, the whole thing was
just get used to it because I'd never worn a ring before.
My fiance, like sort of joking, mostly jokingly, before we were engaged, she's like, why do I gotta wear a ring and tell everybody I'm off the market and you just walking around, you know, free? You know, we had a good time about it. And so then, when we got engaged, she gave me this.
Especially as a man rocket, you know what I mean?
You gotta do it.
Trevor, let everybody know where they can follow you online. Incredible content, incredible memes. He goes viral once a week or so. So Trevor, let everybody know where they can follow you.
I appreciate it, man. At Tampa Bay Trey on Instagram, on X, formerly known as Twitter, and then all the great draft work from the people that are putting it together over at pff.com.
I love it, Trevor. Thank you so much, my friend. We will talk with you soon, and have a great rest of your day, my friend.
Appreciate it, fellas. Anytime.
Thanks, Trev. My guy.
Well, our guy. All right, guys, let's get one quick ad read, then we want to talk a couple quick comments, and we'll get out of here. Our friends over at Home Field Apparel, go visit homefieldapparel.com. Use promo code Stadium and Gale, all in one word, at checkout. We'll get you 15% off of your order. They have some bundles. They have probably 20, 25 different shirts, baseball, track, football, traditional retro Florida Gators logos. Go visit homefieldapparel.com. Promo code Stadium and Gale at checkout will get you 15% off of your order. Gentlemen, I want to ask you about Steve Spurrier's comments and what you think about them. Or if it is something that Gator fans should be concerned about. Steve Spurrier was quoted in an article where he interviewed with Gene Frenette, who I believe is a Jacksonville writer. He said, there's a feeling around the Gators of what the heck are we doing? There's a lot of questions that I don't have answers to about the organization. Just because you hire the most people doesn't mean you're going to win. All these extra people, I question how much that really helps. Billy Napier is a good guy who works his tail off. I like Billy, good family man, but do wish the organization was a little more tidy.
Yuck. Does that need to be said? No. Does Steve Spurrier get to say whatever he wants? Absolutely. Is it brutal for the man who has to drive by a bronze statue of Steve Spurrier in a building that Spurrier has an office and coach his football team on a field named after said coach? Yeah, brutal. Did not Billy Napier and the Florida Gator football program did not need that to be printed. But listen, yes, sir. Listen, head ball coach, the head ball coach, that is the first son of Florida Gators football, Heisman winner, coached the Heisman, won the first national championship. Steve Spurrier gets to say whatever he wants. And if you don't like it, then win football games because he will talk trash for you if you're winning football games.
Yeah, we've seen Steve. I've seen him frown up. I remember the Miami game when Dan Mullen was – the offense wasn't clicking and Felipe was doing his Felipe thing and Steve did that frown in the booth that's like famous and that GIF went. But I like when Steve Spurrier chimes in on the program. I just wish it was like a little bit more in depth of like the entire program. We keep making these hires and fires. Like, why are we not hiring, firing, and doing things in capacity to be successful? But yeah, I'm with it, man. Steve is one of those guys that helped set the standard at the University of Florida, and he should be able to, you know, get his opinion out about where the standard is as of now. But I think it's more in depth than just, you know, what's going on with Billy. But he hit the nail on the head. We all are like where are we at right now? It seems like we're in a flux and we're in no man's land in a lot of different areas. Coaches, like, there's no stability with retaining people, continuity. So there's a lot to be desired right now.
Yeah. We talked about it a few weeks ago. I think my biggest concern is just if you're going to sell yourself as an organizational magnate and that's what you're going to focus on, there does seem to be a lot of organizational and operational deficiencies. The staff is probably double the size of Dan Mullen's staff. It's probably quintuple the size of what Steve Spurrier had. And obviously I know college football has changed and everything else. But I think the organizational comment to me is one that really stuck out there,
it's fair.
But go ahead, Nick.
I think that it's just a tough comment.
This is big boy football. This is the SEC. This is University of Florida. That's fair criticism. Like, we got a lot of people running around for a lot of unorganization. Like, things don't seem organized, and you brought all these people in to be, you know, super efficient and organized, and it's just not happening on a lot of different fronts. So I think it's fair. I don't think anything was harsh. I think there's a deeper conversation about the entirety of, you know, like, we holding Billy accountable. Let's hold some other people around the organization accountable as well. Billy ain't hire himself. So I think there's a deeper conversation that they can ask Steve and we can get some more perspective on his overall opinion of the entire situation.
We should try to get him on the show. One final comment.
I'll call him. See what he's got going.
Cool. You guys have any thoughts on what Trevor Etienne said? He was
bad week on the internet. Bad week on the internet for Gators.
Couple of days there.
Trevor can kick rocks barefoot on a dirt road, man. Like, we don't care. He called himself RB2.
That is a lover's blind quote, Silk. I'm glad that you are fully entrenched in love is blind.
Hey, man, I'm living this love and blind. I'm not a reality TV guy, but it's crack-a-lacking. I like it. Toxicity at an all-time high. You got to love it. You know, seeing people tell strangers they love each other after one invisible night of not seeing each other in just a conversation. I think it's dope, but Trevor Etienne, I just think it's time to move on, bro. He called himself RB2. I think he's super replaceable with what he brought to the table. Why I love his talent while he was here. But, man, it's like, you're replaceable, my guy. It's not that deep. Go be RB3-4 at Georgia, and we'll see how it all works out. But I like the freshman that we brought in. I like Treyon Webb. I like Montrell Johnson. Running backs is one of the most replaceable positions in college fall. And I think we'll be more than fine.
Yeah, and Cam Carroll in there, too, should he recover fully healthy. So if you guys didn't hear, then we can kind of end on this. Trevor Etienne was on a Georgia podcast, I believe.
I think it's other football players too. It's like that.
Okay. It's called Real Talk. I'm not.
Yeah, I think the two guys that were on either side of him are on the roster as well.
Gotcha. Okay. So he said, for me, does the good outweigh the bad? I've been with Florida for 2 years. I went through the whole process of rebuilding. Of course, Florida was rebuilding when he committed. It's still kind of rebuilding. I feel like there was a lot of uncertainty. So like a lot of questions were unanswered. There's a lot of unknown going on. I felt like I can stay here and do what I've been doing for another year or two, a bet of myself, and take a chance somewhere else. To sum it up, I can be running back 2 on a losing team or go somewhere. I wanted to play in December 2. That's a big part of me transferring. So I said I can stay running back 2 on a losing team or go somewhere and possibly be running back number 1 and win a natty.
That's that KD culture, baby. That's the KD culture, Stoke. He's not wrong, though. Like, Georgia's roster is way better than Florida's. Georgia will compete for an SEC championship in 2024. Compete for a championship in 2024. Florida will not. It's a KD culture. Ran away from OKC to go win in Golden State, ran away from Golden State, and then ran to Brooklyn, and they thought they had this whole new thing. It's just like, listen, you can stay and rebuild and be loyal, or you can run away in championship chase when things get hard where to the place you committed.
I'm still against him.
I think he would have been Florida's best running back on the roster. But like you said, so running back is a very easily replaceable. And I said before that I think the perception of him leaving and where he went is worse than what you're losing in terms of production.
But there's also no way he's RB1 on Georgia. Oh, I just see.
No, but he's I can be RB2 at Georgia and win a championship, or I can be RB2 at Florida and maybe go 6-6 again or 7-5.
If he don't learn how to pass block, I don't think he's going to be RB2 at Georgia, right? And then you're just, you know, a role player on a national championship team that nobody remembers, right?
Punters get the same ring that the quarterback does.
I think there's like, I'm still old school into the fact that like, there's still got to be some loyalty, right? I rocks with Trevor. I've done content with him. We've chatted personally on some stuff. Like, he's a dope kid, but I'm still from old school. Loyalty, like his options when he was deciding on the school wasn't vast. He didn't have a lot of options. Georgia wasn't knocking at your door. You know, you came in as a true freshman. Everybody don't play true freshman running backs. Like, Billy played you right away game 1 versus Utah, and you got busy. I just think there's a level of loyalty. He could have went anywhere in the country. And I feel the same way about Richie Leonard, right? You could go a lot of places, but you chose to go to rivals that we play against. And it's up. And I think our roster should feel that way. You know, Shamar James should have ETN's number in his locker. And when we play Georgia, rain, sleet, or snow, he should want to put his face mask in his chest. Same thing with Richie Leonard, bro. Like, when he come pulling around, we know his weaknesses. Somebody should want to drill him. Like, Cam Jackson, my guys in the trenches should want to lay him out. You went to the ops. You could transfer. I get today's culture and what it is now. But when you decide to go to our number 1 and 1A, 1B rivals, it's up. You know,
you think that's the not that we're all going to be aging ourselves here, Silk, but like that would have been the mentality, you know, when we were 18, 19, 20, 21. Do you think that is the mentality now?
Or
is it like, yo, I'll dap you up before the game, during the game, after the game?
Yeah, I think competitors compete, right? And if you got on other teams' jersey, even though we're friends, I've competed against my own brother, cousins, all of that. When you put on a uniform, bro, like, you get hit like everybody else, and we'll be friends after the game. Like, LeBron is still out the blood. Like, KD is still out the blood when it's competition time.
Twitter after games.
Yeah, you could dap it up after the game, but yeah, I expect competitors to compete. And if we got guys on this roster that are friendly with guys that got Georgia uniforms on while the game's being played, then we got the cultures off. Like, it should just be absolute hate. You know, Georgia, like, Brent Cox was here, it was absolute hate for him every time they suited up against him. And that's what it should be. It's still a competition. It's still a gladiator sport. You know, you got to want to lay people out. And I expect Shamar James to come with that type of heat for my man Trevor Etienne. It is what it is. But somebody got to put their helmet in his chest. He got to feel the pain, even if they win the game. Make him feel some pain.
I love that. Love it. Nick, you have song of the week, buddy. I want to appreciate everybody
for rocking with us.
Thursday, today. We live, baby. We got to talk about it. Thursday, spring game, spring practice. We start Thursday.
We start Thursday. Yeah. So we'll talk and dive a little bit more into that today. Next week, pardon me. I appreciate everybody for watching. Before you leave, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, share it, follow us on all social media accounts. Really appreciate everybody that joined in the discussion today. Again, lucy.co/stadium, alumnihall.com, and home field apparel. Nick, what do you got for us?
I got this one. I think he is a Christian singer, songwriter, rapper.
Kanye?
The song is called Good Day by Forrest Frank.
Oh, I thought it was the Yay Church album.
No, Yay. Good Day even by though Forrest. Silk's been on that Meek Mill album, I bet he has.
No, I absolutely haven't.
The only thing Meek Mill's not been on.
Listen to the backside of the Meek Mill album.
Whoa, that's crazy to put Meek like this. That's wild. I don't have a rebuttal for that. I wasn't prepared for that line, but I thought Meek Mill had a full project. It was an EP of like 5 songs that it was okay. I didn't even like it, man. Yeah, it was.
No.
Yeah. I got so many jokes that I'm not going to do because this is a family show still, guys. Like,
bro, I literally just made Song of the Week a Christian rapper, and then we went, and then I steered us down this road. I apologize.
And I called you.
Great voice, great song. Good Day. Silk, make sure you listen. Do your homework.
I appreciate.
I know
that,
you're not listening to my Irish.
My brother
jigs.
In Christ.
My brother in Christ. Still the funniest text message I've ever seen in my life. All right, guys. Same corner, same time next week. Appreciate you guys for watching and listening.
Okay. I'm about to have a good day. No matter what they say. Sun is shining down on me. Birds are singing praise. I'm about to have a good day. In every single way. The God who made the universe knows me by my name, so it's a good day. Baby in my arms, walking through the neighborhood. Living in the present, not woulda, shoulda, or coulda. I remember back when I was low as a rug. Now I'm standing up, look at what my father does. Turning all things new, gray skies blue. Hear the church say, and won't he do it? I know he's got my back. That's why I'm singing that. I'm about to have a good day. No matter what they say. Sun is shining down on me. Birds are singing praise. I'm about to have a good day. Every single way, the God who made the universe knows me by my name, so it's a good day. Yeah. It's a good day, no, it's great. Everything I prayed for didn't come in late. I got all I need and I didn't have to wait. Ask me if you love me, you didn't hesitate. Turning all things to gray skies blue. Hear the church saying, won't he do it? I know he's. That's why I'm singing that. I'm about to have a good day. No matter what they say. Sun is shining down on me. Birds are singing praise. I'm about to have a good day. In every single way. God who made the universe knows me by my name. So it's a good day.